Welcome, everyone, to the Screamcast, episode 58. I am Sean DeRager.
50 shit.
God damn it. With me, Brad Henderson. What's up, man?
Hey.
Hey.
You always play this freaking grumpy role, this grumpy, tired old man role.
Because I am grumpy.
And I'm not buying it, you son of a bitch.
No, it's kind of like how, you know, being introduced... It's kind of the same line as when I would, when you'd say, you can find us at Sean C. DeRigger on Twitter and Brad F. Henner. It's like, people know.
You need to relax. But you know, we're getting new listeners every day, and some of them don't know who the hell you are or who I am. So that's what's up. That's what's up, man.
Fine.
All right. Today we are talking Don't Go in the Woods.
You should have played that
alone.
Song. Stop saying alone. I wonder if we can isolate that track that plays at the end. Did you listen to the actual song that plays?
Oh, no.
During the credits, it's a song about the movie.
Oh, that's amazing.
All right, it's like this old, like, kind of country, like, synthesized, like, I can't believe we didn't ask him that. But it's kind of like, don't go into the woods tonight. And it's like, or you might be killed. Don't go into the woods tonight.
I think I remember hearing it now.
Yeah, I love it. That's pretty good.
My water. Hold on a second.
Oh, did you drop something on your keyboard?
Professionalism. No, I got my brand new keyboard. It's all nice and sleek and sexy.
Aside for that one stain on it from last night.
Well, those happen.
Just tell the truth. That's really how you ruined your keyboard.
I was watching all that, you missed
the sock.
I was watching all that Tinto Brass and
you missed the sock and then it hit the keyboard.
Yeah,
that's
well,
gross.
You know. No comment. All right, moving forward.
Exactly.
That's never happened ever.
No, I wouldn't think it would. That'd be weird.
That would be
weird. Yeah, I've never done that.
I would never admit to anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, moving along. Brad, what's on your doorstep, man?
Holy cow, I almost forgot.
We'll get the door.
Pizza.
What, we're doing that right now?
Yeah. All right. Yeah, why not?
You go first.
People are... You know, we can bullshit all we want, but we're going to be talking to the Vinegar Syndrome fellows again today about their release, Don't Go Into the Woods Alone. Remember
dot,
that?
Dot,
you'll hear in the interview that title is up for contention. Anyway, but we want to get to that, so let's jump into this. You want me to go first?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, so you watched like 2 billion... You watched 2 billion movies this week, so I guess I better, huh?
2 billion. Well, that's an accurate number, but go ahead.
All right. I got a few things that I finally got around to watching from my stack. Things keep coming in the mail, and I'm slowly finally watching them. But the first movie I got to was the Wachowskis' first movie, Bound.
Is that your first time?
First time watching it.
That's the reason why you ruined your computer.
I don't know what I was, for some reason, I'd always confused this, maybe it's just because of the title, with there's a Lawrence Fishburne and Stephen Baldwin flick that I can't remember the name of it. For some reason...
It's called Bound.
No, it's not called Bound. But for some reason, I was thinking that – I don't know if I was confused. I was thinking that was their first movie. It's not even directed by them. I don't know what the hell I was thinking.
But isn't Lawrence Fishburne in a movie called Bound? That's the one I thought you were thinking about.
No, I don't know. I don't know. But there's a Stephen Baldwin flick in Lawrence Fishburne where they're like – they escape prison or something.
Oh, Fled.
Fled. There we go. Yeah. You know, it's the single title word, Fled. Bound. I don't know. I don't know what the hell I was thinking. So I'd never seen this, and I saw the poster and – Arrow was having a sale, and I saw that they had it on Blu-ray, and I was like, oh, shit, I'm grabbing that, because it was the Wachowskis, and it turned out I'd never seen it. So I watched this movie, and goddamn, it is good. I think this is my favorite Wachowski movie now. It's like this...
More than the Matrix?
Yes. Yes, I think so. Because this is a lower-key film. The cinematography is fantastic. I think they worked with the same guy in Matrix, I think. I'm not sure. But it's very low-key. It's more of a film noir with Jennifer Tilly. Jennifer Tilly. And Gina Gershon. And Joe Pantoliano.
Joey Pants.
Joey Pants. The cast is fantastic. Jennifer Tilly and Gina Gershon.
Gershon.
As a couple.
I don't know if I'm saying it right.
Holy moly. That's some hot stuff going on in this film. But it's, you know, I just can't believe it took me so long to see this. It was so well done. I think it was surprising to me on how well done of a movie it was, because this is, could easily be like a piece of little 90s straight to video trash, you know. But it's done so well. The plot is simple but well written. Basically, Jennifer Tilly's character strikes up a relationship with Gina Gershon. I'm gonna say Gershon. I don't know. And who's working in an apartment next door, like restoring it or whatever. And she happens to be a lesbian. And her and Jennifer Tilly strike up a friendship and decide they want to rob Joey Pantoliano's characters because he works for the mob and had just brought in like a $2 million score. And that's the setup of the plot, and things go from there. And it is really well done. Pantoliano is fantastic. Jennifer Tilly and Gina Gershon are great, and like very believable. Like their relationship is very believable. But I loved it, man. I mean, I don't know what I was expecting, but it blew me away.
Same here.
I think it's available on Netflix Instant. So if you've never seen this, get on it and have a box of tissues nearby.
Because you're gonna cry,
right? Yeah. From your penis.
Jesus Christ! You're basically solidifying that you came on your keyboard.
No. That did not happen. All right, next up, this is another from my Arrow splurge.
Sploosh.
Jeez, we're going all downhill today.
Like, any episode's different.
This is a movie, I bought it basically directly on the cover. I had no idea what it was, I'd never heard of it. The cover, I think...
Bottle of wine.
The cover, I think, was misleading because it looked more like just kind of a giallo slasher or something like that. It's called White of the Eye. It's from 1987.
It's not at all.
The cover that they did, that they commissioned for it or whatever, I don't know if that was an original theatrical poster or not, but very misleading. But if you
flip, is the one with like the guy like standing over like a cartoon with an eye like in the middle of his face?
He's like holding up a mirror, and then once you've seen the movie, it makes sense. But I think it misrepresents the film, maybe. But it's starring David Keith and Kathy Moriarty and Alan Rosenberg, directed by Donald Kamel.
That name doesn't sound familiar.
He did Demon Seed.
Oh.
And he did a U2 Unforgettable Fire documentary. He hasn't done too much. He's done like three U2 things.
God.
He hasn't done too much. This is a very strange film involving like there's murders that have been going on, and with our main character, David Keith, kind of gets pinned by the cops for the murders, and he's like a stereo repairman, and it goes back and forth in the timeline. You see, like, there's a lot of weird flashbacks. He sports an amazing mullet in the earlier flashbacks. It's kind of a weird, sleazy little film. I guess weird's the best way to say it, to describe it. But
yeah, I mean, it feels like it's from the 90s to me. Like, it feels like those 90s films that you... Well, for me, anyways, like... I was allowed to rent like a horror film, and then I would go to like to the thriller section and try to find something trashy so I could see titties and sex.
Yes.
And that's kind of what this film feels like. It feels like one of those like really gritty. That's what it feels like to me. It feels like a gritty like 90s sexy thriller.
Right.
I don't know. But yeah, I could totally tell like I understand what you're saying, though, because the whole cover for everything is extremely misleading to what the film actually is.
I really liked it. It was very strange.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
Donald Camel or Camel or whatever, he's trying – it's like he's trying to walk the line between art film and sleazy thriller, right?
It's a great movie, but it's just it is. You feel dirt. I felt dirty after watching it.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend it. I don't know where else you can find this. It's probably on DVD somewhere, but the Arrow Blu-ray I got for pretty cheap on during that sale. So if you ever come across it, I would say give it a shot and watch it. I had a good time watching it. And just going down the line here in order of events that I film is in. The Babadook came out last week, and I got the Shout Factory, Scream Factory Blu-ray with the slipcover that they were selling on their site for like $20-something. I got it from Amazon for like $14.98. It was also at Best Buy for that cheap. So,
but it's not that special edition, is it?
There's nothing different about the disc. It's just they have a slipcover that opens up like a pop-up book.
Yeah, kind of like just like the movie.
It's packaging. So. It's cool. Like, it's one of the few times I would buy something based on the slipcover. And that's, I think slipcovers, they need to do this more. If you're going to do a slipcover, do something special. You know, make it fun. Don't make it the exact same artwork that's on the Blu-ray disc, because it's like, other than that, it's like, what's the point, you know?
Because it protects the Blu-ray case, I guess.
Whoa.
I'm not a slipcover fan.
You should relax.
But there have been arguments online. I have gotten into it. Some people take the slipcover off, flatten it, and put it into a drawer to store it. What's the point? Some people leave it on.
When they go to sell it, probably.
I guess. Maybe. I do that with some movies. But other movies, slipcovers go in the trash. Anyway, the Babadook. 2014. It was 2014, right? When this came out, or was it?
Yeah.
So what? Some movies, well,
it,
you know,
it went around a festival.
Yeah.
In 2014.
But I'm thinking it was like 2013 when it was actually film released. But I could be wrong. But this was I'd heard a lot of things about it. I heard a lot of people overhyping it. You know, there's the William Friedkin. You know, he friggin' splooged all over this movie. With his quote, and it's like once he did that, people kind of backed away and weren't praising it as much. And because it was like the scariest film he'd ever seen, and
are praising it, and then you come out like the thing is like it's great. Like there's nothing to hit. I think we mentioned it on the podcast before. It's like nothing against him because obviously he wants to show his love for the movie, which is great.
It's a fan. It's very
and
flattering,
it's, and it's yeah, it's a great you know thing to happen. But on the downside of that is that you have people take that and use that and then slap it everywhere. Mm-hmm. Like the distributor, the distributors don't care. They love that quote.
Yeah.
So they just want to go on and on and on. And it kind of ruined things because it's like, oh, this is the scariest movie ever made.
Yeah.
And it's like,
scare me movie. I'm going to sit back and judge you.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a tough call on that one.
I think it's a very well done film. I think Jennifer Kent does a fantastic job with this. I think that the actors are great. Essie Davis, Noah Wiseman, and Daniel Henshaw are the three that show up first. You know, but I think it's a fantastic movie, and I think that people went in expecting an overall kind of just monster movie, and I think that they were let down because. I don't want to give anything away, but the characters are going through, or the main character, Essie Davis, is known at the beginning of the movie where she's a single mother and she has lost her husband. So there's this kind of overall grief factor where she's been dealing with the grief of this loss, and this movie is, I wouldn't say. You can't just look at it as a straight monster movie. There's allegory there, and there's definitely like symbolism about grief and even mental illness and stuff like that. So I think handling those themes and how things play out throughout the movie for me hit home just because personally, you know, in the past 8 years, you know, I've been around, you know, my wife's family has dealt with grief, and you see how that affects people and how family members can be pushed away and people just act irrationally. So, for me, it hit home. Like, I thought it was really well done. And, when I talked to my wife about the movie, and she doesn't want to see it, but I kind of told her what it's about and spoiled the movie for her and everything, you know, and told her about it. And she thought it, based on my recollection of it, it really hit things on it, you know.
Well, oh, for the grief part.
For the grief part.
Meant, yeah.
Not for the monster.
Like, wait.
Not for the like, pop-up book.
Is that what you do? Is that you explain the movie she doesn't want to see? And then she's like, oh, that's a good movie.
Well,
that's what I thought you were going.
No, we were discussing like the themes, and I think it made for, you know, very interesting conversation. And I think as far as that
it does,
goes,
it
hits the nail on the head with that. And I think people are going in just expecting, scariest movie ever, scare me, you know, show me a monster. And I don't know if people are looking for like a more of a derivative monster movie, but it's not. There's a lot of subtext. Some people were saying, well, it's just too obvious with this metaphors. And, you know, it's just one of those movies that can't win if you're going to go in trying to judge it. But I think
just enjoy it
on its own. It's a very well done film. And I'm with all the subtext and everything. Because at first I didn't see it, but once the movie ended, I started thinking about it. It's one of those that kind of I chewed on for days, you know, and thought about it and talked to people. I wanted to talk about it to as many people as I could. And, I think you should give it a shot.
This is why people keep their slip covers, because if you chew on your Blu-ray,
right,
with the slip cover on, it looks new.
Yep. But I think it's a film that I think some people are writing off now just because of the overhype. You know, they're saying it's overhyped. People are writing it off. And now it's on Netflix, so even more people are kind of writing it off. Some people are watching it and loving it. So I've just seen some really like polarizing conversations online about it. So. Anyway, I think it's worth a shot. It's easily available now, so watch it and, you know, judge for yourself.
Send Sean hate mail.
Yeah, I want to see what this director does next. I think this is her first film, and it, you know, it's great. It's for, you know, it's like whenever you have a first film that comes out like this, it's like, you know, unless you're M. Night Shyamalan and you just kind of get all cocky and dig yourself into a ditch, and then bury yourself.
Whoa.
Someone was saying they were at a movie in a trailer for an M. Night Shyamalan, I don't know if it's produced or directed, movie came up, and everyone in the audience just laughed once his name appeared. It's sad. All right, anyway, so the Babadook is available at Netflix streaming. I wanted to do like a whole spoiler episode, but now that it's on Netflix streaming and everything, you know what, everyone just go watch it and discuss amongst yourselves. You don't need to hear our babble about it. Right?
We just did.
All right. Next up, I finally got around to watching my Olive Blu-ray of Scott Speedman. Wait, Jeff Speakman. Ah, Scott Speedman. I suck.
Dude, you have...
I'm going to edit.
You have Scott... No.
I'm going to edit this out.
No, because I'm going to say
Scott Speedman on the brain.
Yeah,
Underworld, right?
Yeah, if you say anything, if you cut it out, I'm just gonna say that you said it. So you better just leave it.
I think I was talking about Underworld the other day, and it's just his name stuck in my head.
I mean, I always have Scott Speedman on the brain.
You know what Scott Speedman looks like? It looks like every time I see him, I think of the Creed singer, the singer for Creed.
Scott Stapp?
Yeah.
Oh.
Especially in Underworld. All right, Jeff Speakman in The Perfect Weapon. And I think either you or Brian had turned me on to this movie. It had to have been you. And then Brian was getting it, and then I was like, you guys were talking about it back and forth, and I had to jump on the train. And I finally finished the movie. I finally got around to watching and finishing the movie, and this movie's a lot of fun. It's not a good movie by any means.
Whoa!
What I mean is, you know, it's a perfectly fun B-level action flick where Jeff Speakman in his apartment, in his living room, doing karate or kung fu or whatever to that song. What is it? I've Got the Power, whatever that song is.
Yeah.
Da-na-da-da-da-da-da-da.
That's pretty good.
Power. Right?
It's pretty good. But, I mean, yeah.
It's your basic 90s action movie plot, right? Like his... especially with a martial arts film. Someone close to him, his master, his teacher, gets roughed up and killed, and he must go track the people down that did it. Right?
Yeah, it's...
But it's awesome. It's, you know, it's great.
I guess so.
What am I missing, Brad? What am I missing about this?
Well, you said karate, and number one, it's Kenpo.
Kenpo, that's what it. That's what, I was trying to think. I was like, what was I doing? And I remembered I did Kenpo X.
And it's a lot more than him just avenging his sensei's death. Because it also has to deal with family and his brother.
Right.
Because he's still trying to protect his brother.
You've seen this more than me, so
I've seen it countless times. Yes.
But
don't forget that he also uses Excrema sticks too.
Oh yeah.
Also known as Kali sticks.
Well, it was a fun movie, and you should definitely watch it. I had fun with it. I will definitely be watching this again when I'm in the mood for a Kenpo kick.
Kenpo.
When I'm done doing my Kenpo X workout video, I'm going to throw this in, and I'm going to work out with him in his living room.
Dude, he's like the best. He really is. He has another movie called Street King, and it's really fucking good.
He's I don't think I've seen too much of Jeff Speakman movies.
No, he kind of, like, he tried, like, really, really hard to be kind of that 90s martial arts guy. I mean, he had a movie called, like, The Expert and stuff, and, yeah, I mean, he did this huge run in the 90s, and then he just kind of stopped. I guess it was kind of, there's another actor that kind of did that. I made fun of him on a podcast, kind of, and then I felt bad. Gary Daniels. Gary Daniels is, like, the same way. He's, like, in all these, like, low-budget action movies, and he's a decent guy, at least. But he just, like, never, ever made it. And it's kind of depressing, you know? Because it seems that – because all these, like, muscle men that don't have any skills in martial arts – never, they made it. Like Stallone, Dolph Lundgren, even though he has some kind of, you know, he does have a little bit of background with that.
He plays the drums really good.
And Schwarzenegger, like all these guys were all meatheads who couldn't act that got these roles. But then you had people like Gary Daniels and, you know, Mark Dacascos and
Dudikoff.
And Jeff Speakman. Dudikoff isn't a martial artist, I don't think, though.
He's an American ninja man.
I know, but I don't think he's like a skilled, like professional right. martial arts. But like all these guys, and they actually could act, but they never made it. And I don't know what it was, because I think that women would be more, I guess because women weren't watching it though. That, yeah. I guess that I just answered my own question.
It reminds me of Scott Atkins too. Like he's a recent example of someone who is very good at martial arts, but he gets a lot of stunt roles, but he's a good actor too in his own right.
Yeah, it's just an odd setup, like how they didn't do it. And I wish that, you know, because Gary Daniels was in the Expendables. I was waiting for, you know, Jeff Speakman to show up in one of the Expendables. Yeah. And he hasn't yet. I don't know if he's done acting or like it's just a little depressing, you know?
Yeah.
Like you try really hard and you have these skills and you want to succeed, but you know, obviously his movies didn't make a lot of money, nor he was being offered role after role. It is really depressing to me, because I love Jeff Speakman. I thought he was you know, a fine actor, and you know, I like watching him kick ass.
Yeah.
And just him with those sticks alone gives me goosebumps all the time, because I love it. I love when he has the staff and he's fighting, and then they break the staff in half. Yeah. And it creates his weapon
then
of
it's
choice.
On.
So then he just beats the shit out of him, and he's super fast. And I've always read that they didn't drop frames to make him look like he actually is going that fast.
Oh, that's cool. That's awesome.
But yeah, they never drop frames while editing the movie, because he is that quick.
Very cool. All right, I got a few more here. Next up, I watched for the first time a Sean Connery flick called The Name of the Rose. And
this movie, I never watched that. I just always saw it on the shelf, and it looked like one of those super boring movies.
Yeah, me too. But what it is, it is a Sherlock Holmes film.
Oh, okay.
Basically, because he plays William of Baskerville is his is his character, and he's basically like a Franciscan monk detective. So he comes into this monastery. Shit's been going down. They've heard about it, so he kind of comes in to investigate the situation with his little young sidekick, Christian Slater. And little innocent boy, Christian Slater. And it's a mystery movie, and it was really good. Like, they come across, you know, crime scenes or whatever. There's some pretty gruesome aftermaths of a murder, a few murders. And the cast is stellar. It's
is it Interstellar?
Interstellar. F. Murray Abraham.
F. Murray Abraham.
F. Murray Abraham. It's early, man. Christ. I'm fucking up all over the place. F. Murray Abraham is in it, and Christian Slater, Helmut Qualtinger.
Dude.
And there's a lot of other people's. You know that there's that really old actor.
There's actors in it.
There's that actor who always kind of talked like this, you know.
Oh, the chick that plays in Monsters, Inc.
It's a guy. You've seen him in stuff. He's played in things. He's been in some horror movies too.
Gilbert Godfrey.
It's not Gilbert Gilbert Godfrey's more like this.
Jesus.
It's turning into an impression hour. What's his name? William Hickey. William Hickey. He was in Nightmare Before Christmas. He was the voice of the little mad scientist guy with the brain. But he's very distinct looking. You would recognize him if you saw him.
Oh, you're talking about the old dude. He was in. He's in. Fucking Christmas Vacation.
Yeah,
he plays. Yeah.
That he's in. He's also in Remo Williams, The Adventure Begins.
You know, we always talk about the telephone book when we mention Vinegar Syndrome, and he's actually in that too.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
I like that guy. He was
obviously, since you are in love with his voice.
Well, he's one of those guys he shows up in a film and you're like, oh, that guy, you know, and he always plays an off the wall old character. And in this one, he's a little more.
He's old.
He's freaking old. He died back in 97, but.
There you go with the death again.
But this movie is really well done. I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the mystery aspect of it. Like I said, the cast is great. There's a lot of character actors in this film. There's a really weird sex scene with Christian Slater. And one of our listeners, off the top of my head, I guess he has a list. Let me see if I.
This is our listener,
Wolverine Factor is his Twitter handle. But on his Letterboxd, he has like a hashtag or something on all the movies that feature penis. And this is one of those movies, and because there is some Christian Slater side schlong in the film. And a really strange sex scene where he's almost raped by a villager.
Wow.
Yeah. Don't watch this with the kiddos.
Did you make that mistake?
No. But it's weird because this movie, for the most part, could be like a PG-13, you know, type film. But there's that one scene that just pushes it into R.
For the A, really.
T and A.
Put it in the butt.
There's no
way. Well, that's, you know, if Christian Slater's going to get, is he getting raped by a dude?
No, it's a girl. It's a girl. It's a girl villager.
Oh.
Yeah, and she like mounts him up, man.
Oh.
And he can't, he's this little scrawny guy. He just lets it happen, which most guys would.
You speak for most guys, I guess. So,
I don't know. You know, I don't know what I'm talking about.
If it was Demi Moore in an elevator, you know, there could be like that, like disclosure.
Right.
I mean, it depends. It just depends on the situation. I can't speak for every man or for myself.
Yeah. Oh, and Ron Perlman is in this. Under makeup, of course. He's playing like a mentally challenged monk that they keep in like a barn.
I'm surprised you used the term mentally challenged, being that your run of of racism and insensitive things that you've said, I'm proud of you.
Thank you. Anyway, The Name of the Rose, I think, is one of my favorite Sean Connery performances. I like Sean Connery as he was starting to get older and the roles he's playing.
Because he gets sexier.
He does. He's yeah. not that sexy as James Bond, but once he's older, man, it's I don't know. I like him a lot in as he's older and in these films. But he's really
good.
It's
okay to say it. It's okay to say it.
Yeah, but I like that this is he's basically playing like Sherlock Holmes, and it's really great. All right, next up we have a newer film. I was going to ask you if you've seen this, but it's called From the Dark. It just came out on Blu-ray.
It's on my list.
God damn. Oh yeah. Anyway, I'm just gonna say I saw it and I really dug it.
I wish you would have told me.
All right. Well, I'm gonna let you expand further on it because.
No. Okay. I'm saying could have. Never mind. Could have had the director on for an episode.
Oh damn.
But I didn't care for it that much, so I was like, eh. You know, and I didn't know you were going to watch it. So if I knew you were going to watch it and you liked it, I would have, you know, it would have been a fun conversation.
Yeah, well, we can have a little...
Because, I mean, I didn't hate the movie, but I just, I have my words.
It's not amazing. You can definitely tell there's a budget, but I think for the budget they did a good job. It's a very straightforward film. This couple in Ireland gets stuck in the wilderness, not the wilderness, but the boonies, farm country. And there's a farmhouse, and there's some sort of monster, and they got to, you know.
Yeah, see, that's the thing, is that you're going to say some sort of monster like the fucking movie does. I hate that. I hated that shit.
It's a vampire.
Is that a spoiler? Well, the thing is, no, it's not, because you learn it's a fucking vampire within the first 5 minutes.
Oh,
even
yes,
when
right.
whatever he uncovers, a fucking steak.
Yeah.
And obviously, it's like, oh, is that a bone? Oh, no, it's a steak. And then... You know, the whole thing with the light, like it's very disappointing because they're literally afraid to call it a vampire because it's going to be lumped in that vampire thing. So number one, that's not a creative angle. It feels like that's just kind of, I don't know. It just feels like it's a weak concept to do that. Like,
yeah, and
we have so many vampire movies, so they're actually scared to call it a vampire movie because vampires are boring at this point. Like, literally, if I have a choice of movies to watch and I find out one's a vampire movie, I will pass these days because they're all the same. And that's exactly what this movie does.
Yeah.
Like, it's filmed well. Like, it looks good. It's, you know, it has a couple tense moments. But all it does, it borrows everything from vampire movies and throws in this. It's a love letter to, like, 80s vampire movies and action movies. That's exactly what it is. Because, I mean, even the vampire living underground, that's John Stakely's Vampires book, which Carpenter made that into a movie, which they don't really go into detail, but Balak and all them, they bury themselves underground to live.
Right. Yeah.
And that's how they stay away from the sun, and then they rise at night. And the whole sequence when she's, like, underneath, like, that bridge thing, and the thing is crawling on top. Dude, fucking Predator.
Yeah.
And, like, the vision of the vampire, like, it kind of has that pitch black vampire feel.
Yeah.
Or a Predator feel.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. There's a couple other things that just feel like things were borrowed from other movies and then thrown into this vampire flick. But it's completely, like, unoriginal. Like, there's no original aspect to it.
Yeah, I give it that.
You've seen this movie countless times. It's just not classified as a vampire movie because they're afraid, dude. From the Dark, like, seriously, like, you're not kidding anybody. And the thing is the director, he directed a movie called Dead Meat that's really great, and he also did a movie that I fucking love that was really odd and bizarre called Stitches about killer clown.
Yeah, that's a great flick.
So I mean, I love the director. I mean, I'm actually happy that he that he did this, just because it was a little bit, you know, still in that horror element. So I mean, I enjoyed it to a certain extent. It was just very, just disappointing because it didn't tread any new waters, especially yeah. from what he's coming from. Like yeah. a fucking movie about a clown, and then he puts in the real history of clowns. Like that's how clowns are.
Right.
But he puts like a supernatural element to it. Like I just thought it was really great, and then he comes with this. I just thought it was kind of weak.
Yeah, I mean it's lower budget. I like the actress in it. I think she's really good. I'm glad that she's just not running around screaming the whole film. And I like that there's a lot of quiet moments in the film and how she reacts to things instead of just screaming. She kind of she takes a more realistic take to it where, you know, if you're by yourself and things are going on and you know, you're gonna try to be quiet. You're not gonna, you know, and I really think she did a great job with that. That's probably why I like the film more than you. Maybe I think she kind of carries it, and there's a lot of quiet moments. I like that. I like a lot of what they did. But yeah, it basically for the most part is a derivative monster / vampire film. But I dug it for what it was. So if it was super cheap, it was like a spontaneous buy at Best Buy. It was like $9 or $9.99, and I was like, oh. And I think
that's usually how Dark Sky movies are. Yeah. They're always pretty cheap.
I know Rob Hunter from Film School Rejects was talking about it. And he liked it, so I gave it a shot. So yeah, I see your complaints are all your critique is valid, and
I know.
But for me, I dug the execution of it. But yeah, it's you know, it could be forgettable, but I think she elevated it past the point of kind of total derivative, and I think she did. If anything, I would like to see what this actress would be in next, because I think she does a great job. Mm. All right.
I can't run around in the dark, too.
Okay, I got two more.
Jesus Christ, dude. You talk about me having a lot.
I know, man. I watched a Blu-ray of Jinro, The Wolf Brigade, the Japanese animation film. I'm not going to go...
Is that a Studio Ghiblets movie?
No, it's not. It's basically a film about. It's more of a drama, and when you're but with some violent bursts of gun battles. It's about this. It's like in the near future, and there's
kind of gun battles.
This guy plays like a special forces, and they're brought in to kind of take care, because there's like these terrorists, there's like a rebel kind of, I'm thinking Star Wars, there's a rebel alliance, but there's like a rebel faction that's using kind of suicide bombers and things like that to go against the government, and these guys are a member of a special forces unit. They go in to handle the situation. These guys have these gigantic, like, handheld Gatling guns that just rip people apart, and a young girl comes down in the sewers where they're patrolling, and she has a bomb. And she's getting ready to pull the string to blow herself up. And he has a moment, because she's so young, where he hesitates. And, cause he hesitates because she's so young, and he doesn't shoot her, everyone's saying over the radio, shoot her. He doesn't, she blows herself up. So the rest of the film is him kind of tortured over that situation, with kind of, post-traumatic stress, PTSD or whatever, and he ends up meeting her twin sister, and they strike up a relationship throughout the film, and he's tortured, and then it's a very interesting kind of character study, and study in, like, kind of, you know, PTSD and things like that in an animated film. I thought I saw it back in, like, high school or maybe early college, and I thought it was just boring as hell. Watching it now, a little bit older, kind of understanding this type of stuff, it's slow moving, but it's not. The cover makes it look like an awesome kind of sci-fi action flick. It's not at all, and it's more of a character study. And it looks great on Blu-ray. So that's all I'll say about that. All right,
you're more passionate about that than you are the other stuff.
Finally, here's something I'm passionate about. I watched one more Sean Connery film. This just was released by Twilight Time in a collector's edition. I haven't jumped into the special features yet, but I watched freaking Zardoz.
Zardoz.
Holy shit. This movie is a clusterfuck of what the fuck.
I think just that picture alone with Sean Connery and that red spandex thing, I think that pretty much
sums up the film. The film opens with a guy with a basically a sharpied on mustache and goatee. And his head is just floating and telling how, and he's like, he's introducing the film. That pretty much sets the tone. And then the next scene is a giant floating cement head saying to, beware of the penis and only, use guns. Cause guns are good and the penis is bad.
Do you get updates on your phone of who's following us on Twitter?
No.
Oh. I just got 3 notifications that stop rape.
Oh,
just
God.
Following us.
Holy shit.
He's obviously following my account and the Screencast account that follows both of us. So now I'm like, wait, did I mention rape on Twitter or something? Like, I don't understand.
Oh my God.
It's just so weird.
There is some in this film with Sean Connery's character.
Oh my God.
But it's directed by John Borman, who brought us Deliverance and a lot of other great movies. This seems like a self-masturbatory project on his part. Sean Connery's in it. Charlotte Rampling, who she was in the Night Porter, and she's awesome. She's in this. She's still great in this. Like, she can give like this icy stare that can just cut through anyone.
Melt your heart.
She's great. But the movie, I don't know. I need to process this film more. But this movie, if you just look at that picture of Sean Connery in his little giant boots and little little red undies, you know what you're getting into. But even the ending just goes batshit ridiculous. I don't know. It's worth experiencing, but I'm regretting this Twilight Time purchase.
Like, I would too, dude. I'm glad it's like $30,
I'm glad I own it, but goddamn, why'd I spend so much money on it? All right.
That's exactly why I don't buy it. Like, they're like 10%, or not, they're like kind of exactly what all of films are, just more expensive.
Right.
With sometimes special features.
Ugh, dang, this segment is going on. I apologize, everybody.
Yeah, you took forever.
Did I take forever? Fuck, sorry.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll have to edit it down.
No, it's all right. I'm going to be longer. How long was the... Oh, Jesus, dude.
Okay. I know. Seriously, I may have to edit it down. I'm making a note. All right, go for it.
All right, so since I have watched more than you, this is going to be a goal. I'm going to try to beat you in time.
Okay.
All right, so recently I have a couple VOD movies on here because that's what I've been watching a lot of lately, and I have some physical media as well. First up was a movie that played at South by Southwest in 2014 that got a lot of praise. It's directed by Riley Stearns, who is Mary Elizabeth Winstead's husband, and Mary Elizabeth Winstead is in this. It's produced by Keith Calder. He's done it's the same kind of group that's done The Guest and You're Next, and it has most of the cast from those two movies in this one. Leland Orser, he plays the dad in The Guest. He plays this character, Asner Roth, who is an author who wrote this book about cults and about what they do and how to get out of it, and, you know, what to look for. Just basically all around a really in-depth book on cults, and it's successful. Then he had a follow-up book that he had to self-publish because no one was really interested. He said what he needed to in the first one, but he was out of money. He owes the, you know, he owes the publisher money because the book didn't sell. He's like on this book tour, but really doesn't do anything because he's kind of a low life now. And just kind of sucks, you know, the life and things, like, wants everything for free and kind of that. So it has this really dark comic twist with it, and super funny at times. Like, you find yourself laughing, but then once they introduce this mother-father character and they come to him, they're like, look, our daughter has went with this cult and we need you to go get her. So he's propositioned for a large sum of money that he can pay this publisher off with. He goes after this girl, and he takes her back to kind of, I guess, quote unquote civilization to find out what's wrong and why did she do this, and you need to go back to your parents and I'm here to save you. So he kind of has that intervention with her. And from then it gets super dark and weird. And I personally loved it. I'm kind of biased. I will say I'm biased when it comes to cult movies because I love that thing. I just find a fascination with cults. But it has this really weird comedic undertone to it. And also just the fact because Lilo Norser is hilarious, but it also has this really like dark, mysterious side to it. And it just, it's fascinating. It's very, once you sit down and it starts happening, you're like, oh shit, I don't know if I should be laughing anymore. Cause now this is kind of getting a little weird. So I really enjoyed it. It's definitely one of my favorites of the year. Not just my favorite of what I'm talking about, but definitely going to be one of my top movies of this year, just because, you know, I love that sort of thing.
Nice.
Another film that I watched, another kind of dark, twisted movie, was called Buzzard. Really fascinating. It's very low key. It's a low life about a guy who is a temp job at this bank, who gets paid like $9 an hour, who doesn't really give a fuck, who just wants everything for free. Again, he calls and complains about the Totino's pizzas so he can get free coupons. He calls about Hot Pockets because they're not good. He orders supplies for his office job, but then returns them to another store down the street to get money. He's just a piece of shit. He loves horror films, obviously, because there's bunch of horror movie posters in his room.
Therefore, he's disturbed.
Yeah, he has this Nintendo Power Glove, ooh, and he's trying to modify it, but he makes it into like a Freddy hand. It's just him, and he gets himself into trouble by doing something. So he kind of has to escape, and with the people that he interacts with, he has a quote unquote friend from his job that he stays with, but he does something. I'm not going to say what it is, but he can possibly get in trouble. So the movie pays homage to kind of the 80s a little bit. Basically it's weirdly viewed as like, this is probably what every horror movie metalhead guy is like, but it's obviously a lot of improv. There's a lot of long takes of just kind of silly shit, but it really works. It's super funny. There's a scene where the lead character just eats spaghetti for like literally probably 4 minutes.
Oh my God.
Maybe 5 minutes.
That's pretentious bullshit is what that is.
Well, that's the thing, is like, it very, like, this movie is almost goes that way, but it doesn't.
Huh.
And I'm not a fan of that pretentious stuff, but it's like mainly because they try to make it all artsy. Sometimes when they have those long takes of nothing, it's like, oh, you know, Vincent Gallo's like, oh, I'm just going to come down the highway in my motorcycle. But you were just going to be staring at the road for like 5 minutes, and then you'll slowly see me come, and I'll just drive past the camera. And then that will be like the 10-minute mark. That's fucking pretentious. And that actually does happen in Brown Bunny. But,
Amongst other things.
But there's nothing pretentious about the movie, because it's obviously made by horror fans, and it has kind of like these horror undertones. But yeah, it's definitely something to watch. It's a fun little small, kind of psychological thriller comedy thing. It's hard to categorize. It really is. The next one is Hooked Up. Ugh. That I wrote on Twitter. My review was no. That's all I said. It's the very first horror film shot entirely with an iPhone.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
It doesn't look like an iPhone, to be honest with you, just because the quality is pretty decent, and they obviously have a light attached to their iPhone. This is bro horror. Oh. If anybody doesn't know what bro horror is, it is kind of the Eli Roth now, what he's doing, like with Aftershock and Green Inferno. It's like, hey, bro, why are you puking, bro? You We want to see some titties. Let's go fuck some bitches. Let's, hey, rape her, man. She's sleeping. Rape her. That's kind of what these fucking movies are like. And it's just disgusting. Number one. Like I said, I don't call, like I said on the last podcast or with Muck, I'm not, don't call movies misogynist. This movie necessarily isn't that, but it goes to that point where it's just two guys go on a trip to Barcelona that are obviously fucking broke. They don't have the money to do this, but they go to Barcelona to go fuck basically. And they get caught up into a cat house, a bordello, whatever you want to call it. And it turns out that there's these ladies are kind of crazy. So it has a couple like scary sequences, but it's totally overshadowed by the overacting of these two guys that are the leads. And I looked up just to see, and this is their first movie together. Like both of them, this is their very first movie, and they, oh, they're so over the top when they scream and they like talk to each other. Like they just, they're trying to like cry and scream. And it just, and it comes to the point where it's just kind of funny. But the poster actually says shot entirely with iPhone. Why the fuck would you promote that? That's going to turn everybody away.
Yeah, I read that. I'm like, oh, Jesus.
That's no selling point to your movie for a distributor or a filmmaker. Like, it might be an achievement to you because you film, you got away with a fucking renting a camera and shit. But that's nothing to promote. That's nothing to be happy about, technically. So don't do that. If you film a movie with an iPhone, don't do that, please. But it's very rapey. Drug. Like, the very first fucking 5 minutes is a guy hovered over a toilet, like, legitimately puking. Not puke is there or it's special effects. They literally had this guy probably eat, like, 20 Big Macs and then fucking puke in a toilet.
They went for it, bro.
Yeah, bro, puke, why are you puking, bro? And it's like, stop. Like, bro horse sucks. It really does. Because it doesn't, no one likes it. That's it. The other movie I watched, I'm kind of excited to see what people say about this movie once it gets kind of, hopefully it gets a DVD Blu-ray release. And it was a surprise to me because I'm a fan of these two filmmakers and I didn't know that they had anything in the works. So when I started the movie, their names popped up and I just had that like total geek out moment where I'm like, holy shit, oh my god, and I start like freaking out and I'm like, oh my god, like I gotta settle down, like I stopped the movie and I'm like, I gotta prepare, you know. And I look it up IMDb and I'm like, holy shit, how the fuck did I miss this? These guys are my fucking favorites. It's just too much to keep up with sometimes, so every once in a while a movie falls through the cracks. But it's a duo called, their name, Trevor Matthews and John Knotts. They did two movies only right now. They have a movie called Jack Brooks Monster Slayer. That's a,
oh yeah,
it's a comedy, great fucking practical effects. And they also have a movie called The Shrine that I really, really like that kind of got shit on a little bit just because The Shrine, real quick, The Shrine is about a bunch of three kids that go overseas for a kind of to do a report on this town. And when they get there, everybody speaks a different language. So, and they're not familiar with their language at all. I forget what it is. But it's not subtitled. So you're in the situation that these guys are, that you have no idea what they're talking about, and all hell breaks loose. So they're trying, these guys obviously know what's happening, these townspeople, and they're trying to fix it, but they're caught in the middle of not knowing what the fuck the legend is, what is happening, what they're trying to do, what they want them to do. And it's just super intense because you're in the position they are. And I really like that. But I think at the same time, people didn't like that because they want to know what they're saying. So anyways, they have a new movie called Girl House. It's very 80s slumber party massacre, but with technology. It's a party house where, you know, a webcam house necessarily, where a bunch of girls live. They have sex, they take off their clothes, they show their boobies, you pay so much a month and you can chat with them and everything. So this new girl, she's down on her luck, so she's pretty, she's got nice boobies, so she goes and she is going to be part of this group. And they have this one participant in the webcam stuff. His name's Loverboy, and he really likes her. And they're like, oh, he's a regular and everything. So he starts talking to her back and forth. Well, anyways, he gets pretty upset at some point. I'm not going to tell you what it is, but he is good with computers. So he finds out, and this is like high tech, like no one knows where this house is, you know, that's very, it's like the guy that runs it's like, you know, no one's going to find you. No one's going to know where this house is because it's top secret. We have the highest level security. Well, anyways, this guy, he goes after him. And he gets to the house, and it's a very 80s great score slasher flick. So I'm kind of excited to see where it goes because it's obviously a love letter to those nudie run-around booby movies. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because, I just talked about Muck, like how awful it was. And this is kind of like has the same thing with boobs, but it's so campy it fits.
Discussed there's a fine line.
Yeah, they never go overboard with it. There's a lot of TNA in this movie. But, I don't know, it's more or less respectful in a way. I don't know if that makes any sense. I'm a dude explaining this, so I'm not very – I would like to have a lady on explaining how they feel about that type of thing. Because obviously it's there to attract and sell units of this movie, but also at the same time it uses, like, if this movie is made in 1986, it would be, you know, a Scream Factory 88 films release, and yeah, everybody would be going ape shit. So anyways, yeah, check out Girl House. Very great. Yeah, great movie. Another one that I watch, very weird found footage aspect on this, it's called Nightlight. It's found footage, but it's not, because there's no camera involved. They use the source of filming through a flashlight. So the flashlight's the camera, but they don't – no one's holding – you see what I'm saying? No one's holding a camera. They're playing a game called Nightlight, and they take a bunch of flashlights. But the one girl, her flashlight is the source of what you're seeing. Okay. But there's no camera. Like, they never identify a camera. It's just they're out there with flashlights, but the story's told through – the flashlight.
Huh.
That makes sense?
Yeah, a bit weird. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's bizarre because it's a found footage movie, but technically it's not, you know? But anyways, it's kind of a Blair Witch type thing. They go out, they play this game out in the woods. There's a dark past with one of the girls because her friend committed suicide, and it kind of, she thinks that has something to play in with what's happening out there. A couple scary sequences, CGI kind of bullshit, but some really, really good moments that even if the movie is – because the movie's a little boring. There's a lot of drama on the side, but there's a lot of moments where you're like, oh, shit, like that's – I want to see that in actually a good movie. but anyways, yeah, Nightlight. Another one I watched was Ryan Reynolds. He's plays a serial killer in The Voices. I heard a little bit of buzz about the movie. It's funny. It's weird. It has that kind of Edward Scissorhand atmosphere where everything's like pink and pretty.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully people get that. I say that a lot in movies, and people are like, "What?
Like pastels?"
Yeah, yeah.
Edward Scissorhands, like all the houses are pastels. Like that whole suburb.
Yeah, but the movie is obviously in the present, but it feels like it takes place like maybe in the '80s, kind of like Napoleon Dynamite in a way, where it's obviously modern, but everything looks like it never updated.
Yeah.
So, Gemma Arterton, Anna Kendrick, great cast. He has mental problems. His cat and dog talk to him, and he goes to see a shrink. He accidentally gets into this serial killing thing, and then it just takes a toll on him. So it's kind of funny. It gets serious at times. Like I said, decent movie. Maybe not for me, but I could definitely see it being people liking this.
Yeah, I've been wanting to check it out.
Another one.
Director of Persepolis.
Oh, okay.
Back in 2007. Yeah, I think it was up for an Academy Award for animated or something like that, but it's a, but yeah, I recognize that film.
Yeah, decent enough. Definitely worth a rental. Another one I watched that was kind of I really, really wanted to see this. I think people would really, really like this movie. It seems like it's something up my alley, but I was just – it didn't hit me like I thought it would. It's called Killers. It's from Indonesia. It's by the producers of, like, The Raid and everything like that. Has some of the actors from The Raid. Gareth – what's his name?
Gareth Edwards.
Edwards. He you know, that directed The Raid, The Raid 2. It's by the team that did – one of the L for Libido and ABCs of Death, and they also did – they helped out with on – dude, L for Libido is fucking great.
I hated it.
So fucking awful.
So disgusting.
But anyways, they also did the segment in VHS 2 with – I don't want to spoil it if no one's seen VHS 2. I can't think of the name of the segment. But anyways, it's the Indonesian segment.
Hmm.
It's the only foreign subtitled thing in ABCs of Death.
Okay.
But anyways, great. I think both of those are fantastic. This is about a guy who is very skilled at serial killing and videotapes everything and uploads it online. And he comes across a guy who is like a reporter that films this. He gets a lot of rape in this podcast today. But he gets kind of abducted by this taxi cab person, and there's a guy that gets in the back and they try to rape him. And it ends up being shootout in a car. Fucking intense as shit. The shootout's amazing. But literally a shootout in a car. Like, it's where you hold your breath for like 30 seconds. It's like, holy shit. But anyways, he films their dead bodies and he uploads it. And then this guy who goes by K on, online tells him, hey man, how did that feel? You need to do it again. The first one's, you know, so great. The second one's even better, but you think you're going to get blah, blah, blah. Basically his whole setup of being a serial killer, and he inspires him to be a killer while he's killing on the side, and they kind of intervene and their stories intertwine. Really great setup. I think the reason why I didn't care for it all that much is it's a little long, kind of like this segment. it's a decent movie. It's got some great, great special effects, really brutal at times. Pick that. It's cheap. It's by Wellgo.
Yeah, it's on my to-watch pile right now.
Yeah. The other one, I was super excited about this one. It was kind of a letdown. It's called Always Watching. Terrible, terrible title. But it's a Marble Hornet story. If anybody is unfamiliar with who Marble Hornets are, it's this YouTube group that took the Slender Man creepypasta thing and started making short films. Not shorts, but they have this story about this filmmaker who wanted to make this movie. And he ended up disappearing. So they grabbed all the footage and they upload it like weekly of these little pieces. And you find out that this kid discovered Slender Man and then is running from him. And then the people that uploaded the footage are actually getting chased by Slender Man as well.
So
it's these guys that created this web series, did this movie and hired a director and everything and wrote this. Doug Jones plays Slender Man, but it's not called Slender Man. A little thing about that people don't know, because I was actually writing a Slender Man story with a couple people, but that all fell through because we found out that the guy that actually created Slender Man on Creepypasta holds the rights to Slender Man. So that's the reason why there's never been a movie. There's like three or four movies that exist, but they have to be uploaded online for free because he owns the rights, so no other can make any money. So they never call him Slender Man. He dresses like Slender Man. He has the white face and the suit, but they call him the Operator. So it's kind of – I think maybe the guy that owns the rights must be fucking pissed. But anyways, they're a little late to the game with releasing this, but they actually held back because of the real life killings. There's been two real life killings about with kids with Slender Man.
Jeez.
Two girls took this other girl out in the wood and stabbed her a bunch of times because they were sacrificing her to Slender Man. And then there was a girl that stabbed her, killed her mom, I think, because she didn't believe that Slender Man existed. weird. But anyways, they held back with all due respect for the situation. They held back from releasing it and making it. But they got a couple names in the movie. It's kind of a cool premise. It's about this reporter that goes around doing this reports on foreclosed houses. So they go into all these houses that are bare that people left over, but they get in this one house where everything is left. Like, you know, electricity is still running. There's dust everywhere, but everything is in place. You know, like the little girl's homework that she was working on is on the table. So they slowly come across these DV tapes that are in the basement. And so they're like, hey, man, watch these because this might give us a story of what happened. Well, they slowly find out that with the Slender Man tradition story, that's another thing they took, which I imagine this guy's pissed, is that once you discover that Slender Man exists, you are then haunted by Slender Man. So once they see the footage of Slender Man on these tapes, Slender Man stalks them.
Hmm.
So you don't want to show anybody anything that you know about Slender Man or tell them, because then you're going to, it's almost like a virus. So anyways, it's really well done. I don't like the jumpy digital, like, you know, camera shortening out. And that's kind of what all this happens with, you know, where he shows up like in a frame and then disappears. So he's only showing up on camera. Not a fan of that because it gives me a headache, but, really great sequences, just runs a little too long again and just doesn't achieve that kind of scariness that Slender, because I think the fake story of Slender Man is pretty creepy. I'm a fan of it. I like watching, you know, the Slender Man videos and everything like that. But it just doesn't achieve that scary factor all the way. I was a little disappointed. Another one, I'm going to run through the rest of these pretty quickly. Wormwood, Road of the Dead came out. It's a New Zealand flick. A lot of New Zealand horror coming out these past couple years. But yeah, it's a Mad Max, exactly what it says, Mad Max meets Dawn of the Dead. That's exactly what it is.
Nice.
Really low budget, but great practical effects. A guy has a family who's on the run that teams up with these other kind of, you know, buddies that were hanging out during a zombie apocalypse, and they all fight together in order to get to his sister. That's
there you
it.
Go. Cool.
Yeah, you know, very fun little action flick. Another one that I watched was Preservation, kind of like Preservation as in Land, about a group of people that go out in the woods to go camping, and they're being stalked by three people with guns. And they are on the run. And it's a cat and the mouse, caught in the woods, deep woods with no source of, like, making a call for help, that are being stalked by these three guys in masks. Definitely a lot of fun. Once you find out what's happening, it's a little predictable, but goes a couple different routes. But all in all, kind of predictable. You've seen it a few times. Once you find out what's actually happening, you're like, oh, it's like this movie. So yeah, a little bit of letdown on that because it's not completely original, but it's very well done. Another one that's getting a little buzz, it's a decent movie called Backcountry. It's kind of an animals attack. Husband and wife get caught up in a black bear that's stalking them in the woods. This movie has more drama between them than actually dealing with the black bear, which I thought was kind of silly because there's something that's really terrifying because it's a fucking bear.
Yeah.
Like, you can shoot bears with shotguns point blank and they will just keep coming. So there's something very, very tense about that. So I thought it was going to be more along the lines of kind of like Blackwater and like Rogue that we talked about on an earlier podcast. But the black bear is kind of subplot.
Right, like set up device for the drama.
Yeah, and I was like, you know, this could be really fucking awesome, like if it was a fucking black bear that was stalking the shit out of them. But, oh well. Another flick I finally got around to watching, bought the Blu-ray, was a movie that people loved, and I understand why. It's by Park Chan-wook, who did Old Boy and the Vengeance trilogy, called Stoker. Yeah. By the cover of the, you've seen it?
Yes.
Okay, by the cover, it looks like some kind of like 1800s drama, but it is kind of like take the like almost like The Guest in a way, you know, where
oh no, I haven't watched this yet. Oh shit.
It's a girl who recently lost her father.
I bought it and haven't watched it yet.
Who lives with her mother, and the brother of their deceased father shows up. He's a younger brother. He's got a weird thing about him, and he kind of intervenes and becomes part of the family.
Hmm.
So it uses that kind of Guest device in a way, even though this is before The Guest, but people can relate it to. And the girl is obviously, she's really torn up about her father gone, but she is a really dark history there. And it's also written by, nothing wrong with this, not that I think the guy's an idiot, but it's always kind of nice when you find out that, you know, some, like an actor, like I'll just explain it more than that, so it should be silly. Wentworth Miller actually wrote this movie. He's like one of the guys in Prison Break, and he was in Underworld. But anyways, yeah, he's just like kind of an action movie star, but he wrote this movie out of nowhere. So that's really cool. I find that pretty sweet that, you know, just some, you know, action movie star that you think is just kind of a meathead is right. What I was trying to go with. Is
yeah, you
actually,
see his picture and you're like, yeah, meathead.
Yeah, he writes a movie like this. Very, very solid script. And especially being directed by, you know, a Korean director at the same time. I don't know, man. It's just a weird, fascinating movie. Super tense. Great performances, 100%, like all around, superb. Even Del Moroni. I always forget how to say his name. But anyways, he's in it. He does a great job, which I don't really care for him all that much.
Oh, Dermot Mulroney.
Yeah, Dermot Mulroney. Sorry, but anyways, yeah, definitely something to pick up. I know that that's kind of been out for a little while. So
yeah, I think it's pretty cheap, too. I think I got it for like $7.99. That's why I was like, oh, shit, and grabbed it.
Yeah, I think people are familiar with it, so
I got a lot of praise.
But if you haven't seen it, definitely check it out, because I think you would thoroughly enjoy it. It's like – it's not even qualifies as kind of like that horror movie. Like, it's a different level. This is like Academy Award, like, type movie. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's really well done, extremely well thought out, not that generic, like, 90s Sleeping with the Enemy, single white female bullshit.
Gotcha, okay.
Which those are great movies, or Copycat or anything like that. It has that feel of being those 90s stalker movies.
Interesting.
So anyways, and my last but not least, for the people that have not seen this movie, because I guess I put this off just because of the time it came out and being it's Hansel and Gretel. I watched Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters because I watched the voices with Gemma Arterton, and I was like, man, she looks good. So I know she was in that Hansel and Gretel movie. I'll give it a chance. Holy shit. This movie is fucking fun as hell. Like, I couldn't believe what I was watching. And being that it did very well at the box office. It got crazy praise over in Germany, because of course that's where the story of Hansel and Gretel comes from. It's by the director of Dead Snow 1 and 2. So like all the elements were there, but it's produced by Will Ferrell and Adam McKay.
Right.
So all those elements into that movie prevented me from watching it. And especially this is the time that, you know, Twilight was really big and, you know, that Warm Bodies come out, kind of that teenager-esque, hey, let's take, you know, this and make it all teenager-esque. Yeah. No. This thing is ultra, like the rated R version. Apparently the PG-13 version was in theaters.
Really? I thought they went all the way R.
Well, it is all the way R, but they released the PG-13 version in theaters. Cause gotcha, I remember when it came out, it was 10 minutes extra rated R.
Hmm.
I was like, oh, so I watched it. Dude, practical effects all around the board. like crazy, like practical effects, wonderful makeup with the witches. It's basically Hansel and Gretel, the story where they, but after the incident of them burning the witch, throwing her in the stove, as everybody knows, they dedicate their lives to hunting witches. And that's basically what they do. So they come across a town that all these kids are being abducted, and they find out that they have their hands in this a little bit from what they've done and who they are. So they hunt down the witches that are abducting these children, and they find out that witches are trying to take over the world. So it's up to them to stop it. And I tell you what, dude, there's a character in this movie. His name's Franklin. And he played, and it's a giant. Any fucking Hollywood movie would CGI the giant and have Peter Jackson come in with his weight of technology and create one. They literally put Derek Mears in a fucking giant suit.
Nice.
And have him stomp around. Like, this thing is huge, but it's all practical. The face, the eyes, it's all animatronic. And I'm just sitting there like, holy fuck. Like, dude, like, seriously, like, how good is this shit that they took the time with something like this and went all out? I mean, obviously, it's the director that really probably wanted practical effects.
Yeah.
But, dude, like, this is, a total homage to, like kind of like the 80s, like, adventure movies. And the thing is, it's not pretentious at all. It knows exactly what it is.
Right.
It's fucking Hansel and Gretel, but they take it to a level of just making it super fun.
I think it got a bad rap because it was the same year that Snow White and the Huntsman came out, and it got kind of lumped into that, you know?
Yeah, no, I could totally – dude, that's the reason why I didn't want to watch it. But, like, this is for any, like, family – put on the PG-13 version, of course – but, like, a family action horror movie, and for people that like – like for the horror fans that are adults, put on the rated R version. Like, dude, it is so good. Like, I mean, it is what it is. It's fucking Hansel and Gretel.
Yeah.
Like, they even have, like, some of the worst jokes and, like, just silly one-liners.
Right.
But, dude, it works so well. And I think it's due to the fact that everybody that's working on the movie knows, dude, we're making a Hansel and Gretel movie. Yeah,
they're in on the joke, and the director just decided just to go with it and have fun with it.
Yeah, and, dude, it is, like, I really, really hope, like, they're talking about doing a sequel and everything. I really hope that happens, because this is definitely, like, it's fucking good. Trust me. Like, it's definitely one of those that you'll watch, and you'll say, holy shit, I'm super surprised that I like this movie.
Wow.
All right. I can't recommend it enough, man. It's, like, I know that a lot of people saw it, but the thing is, there was no bad rap for it. Like, it came out.
A lot of people trashing it, but.
Well, I think they trashed it because maybe they saw the PG-13 version.
Maybe, yeah.
I don't know, but I think more from the horror community. No one really said anything. No one went out of their way to praise it, but it also, I didn't see it get, like, shit on completely.
Right.
And I understand why, because it's fucking Hansel and Gretel, but I'll tell you right now, as a horror fan, this is something, and being a fan of, kind of action adventure movies from the 80s, this is exactly your type of shit.
Cool.
So yeah, definitely give it a watch.
All right, man, that was an epic on our doorstep. We apologize if it's super long, but
hey, at least we could talk about more movies now.
There you go.
Everybody likes it, unless, like, if you want us to shorten it up, if you don't like it, let us know, because we actually mold the show depending on what people say, believe it or not.
Yep. Well, we have an interview with the Vinegar Syndrome fellas, with Brandon Upson, James Neurath, and I think Ryan Emerson was around there somewhere as we were talking to them, but I don't know if he chimes in. But
I think he ignored us.
I think so. He was working. They were preparing for a Cinema Wasteland. So we're gonna get to that right now. We are talking about, of course, don't go into the woods, or don't go in the woods. Don't go
in
somewhere.
The woods.
Alone.
Dot, dot, dot. Alone. I really want them to say that during the title. Like, if you're going to use alone with this movie, you literally have to say, ellipses, or you have to say dot, dot, dot. You have to do both. Like, I won't accept it. I'll just act dumb and not know what you're talking about.
Right.
For some people, a simple warning is never enough. By the time Alma heard it, it was too late. Something's out there in the woods, and it's killing people. Joni never thought it could happen to her. Ingrid and Peter couldn't believe it happened to them. Something's out there, waiting. Something a little bit wild and crazy. For some people, a simple warning is never enough. It's your decision. If you want it chopped off, just take it to the woods. Remember, the call of the wild is the last thing on earth you want to hear. Don't go in the woods. It's coming soon. For some people, a simple warning is never enough.
All right, well, we have some awesome guests with us today to talk Don't Go Into the Woods. We've had a couple of these guys on the show before, but from Vinegar Syndrome, we have Brandon Upson, who's the head of operations and lead restoration artist. We have James Nurath.
Nurath.
See, you just heard
I tried.
It. Let me get all my fuck ups out of the way.
The head archivist and head security of the Vinegar Syndrome Enterprises over there. And then we have Ryan Emerson, the co-owner and director of production. And Ryan is you're in the background there, right? Or are you sitting down?
Yes, I'm actually working right
He's
now.
He's working, okay.
James and I are we're
working pretty hard. He works harder. Yeah.
he might be in and out. Yeah.
It's all good. Well, thanks guys for coming on the show again. We really had a great time talking to you guys last time, and there's always more and more to talk about with you guys. So today we're starting off the conversation here with your guys' newest release, Don't Go in the Woods. Newest horror release, I should say.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask you guys, where, you know, I mentioned this on the show one time, and Brad got all bent out of shape about the alone part. Where
Whoa,
does the dot dot
out of
dot?
Shape?
Where does the dot dot
dot? I
was dot,
fucking pissed.
Alone come from? Was that part of the title originally, or what's?
I've always heard that's part of the title original.
Huh. Yeah. Okay.
But I feel like if they probably tried to market it as a bigger audience, they probably tried to shorten it down.
Yeah. Because Don't Go Into the Woods sounds more natural than Don't Go Into the Woods Alone. It's like a little pause.
Right. So
I can understand them trying to maybe cut that, but in all the original poster art, everything to do with the marketing of the when it originally came out, it still says "Don't go in the woods." Dot dot alone.
Yeah, you can right. see it on the original like cinema marquees above the theater.
Yeah,
and this isn't to be confused with the American horror musical written and directed by Vincent D'Onofrio.
Yeah,
yeah. Please don't do that.
Which was in 2010. So yeah, do not get these confused.
Yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned the loan thing. Now I'm pissed again.
Chill out, Brad. It's okay.
No, it's just that I've had it on VHS from the time. It was probably one of the very first thing I ever, you know, tapes I own, and it always said, "Don't go into the woods." So when I saw the when it came out on DVD at first, I, you know, when I picked it up, I was like, "What the fuck is this?" I thought it was like a sequel or some shit. And I'm looking, and I was like, "Man, I don't like the retitling thing, even if it was the original. I'm not a fan."
So at one point, it did get somewhat retitled. We're not sure which came first.
Yeah, all the posters that I've seen, I haven't seen the actual VHS artwork, so...
Yeah, man, I think you're the poser, actually.
If I was running a video company in the 80s, and all of a sudden I got a title, I'm like, well, I'm going to save money. I
mean, yeah, they probably saved
money. Cut a loan out, and Don't Go in the Woods sounds fine, so...
So this was you guys. This is one of the titles that you guys acquired the rights to, and I wanted to. I think we kind of sort of touched base on this last time we talked, but I wanted to know, like, how does this kind of thing work? Is somebody monitoring the rights, and when they come up, is there kind of a bidding? Did you guys bid for this, or is there, you know, I guess I'm fuzzing on how that works. So you see this happen, like, you know, a lot of times where one company will release a DVD and then now we have other companies releasing Blu-rays. Is it a, like, you all get dropped on an island and it's deathmatch, or?
Ooh, I like that idea.
No, it's way more boring.
I wouldn't
than
say
that.
It's very exciting.
Yeah, no, well, a lot of times, like, something you're talking about where, you know, it's not just us, it's other companies yeah. too. A good example is something like, what was it, I think like Warner Archive, they put out the White Buffalo on DVD as a burn DVD, which right. they have the rights to. But Kino, they just put out the White Buffalo, the Blu-ray, which they own the rights to. And a lot of times what happens, sometimes, you know, companies only pay for the rights to, you know, this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes rights, they lapse, like the contract with the original company ends for whatever reason. You know, either the rights holder decides to, you know, just end it. They don't want to renew it. They want to, you know, look elsewhere. Or sometimes the actual studio or whoever is putting out the DVD, they decide, yeah, maybe it didn't sell as well, or maybe I want to move on to greener pastures, you know. So sometimes they just let it go. And it sucks because sometimes that happens and then all these titles go out of print for forever, you know. And that's why you see on eBay and stuff titles that are – they go up to, you know,
yeah.
ridiculous amounts of money and everything. So.
And sometimes directors, producers, other people that are involved in projects, they don't even know that the actual movie or film was, like, not being put out. So they've thought for 30 years that it's always been out for the general public, and then someone like us comes along and reminds them, and they're just, their minds are blown.
Yeah,
it hasn't been out that long.
Sometimes with a lot of these directors, you know, if it's their first horror film or if it's their, you know, first film or... in general, sometimes it sucks, but sometimes they don't actually own the rights to their own film. Sometimes it's the people who actually put up the money, whether it be like the producers or anything. And a lot of times, sometimes that's who we deal with, is the people who like put up the money and they own the rights, even though, you know, we do try to get in contact with the director and see if he or she wants to be involved. You know, occasionally you get the directors to say, no, yeah, the producer fucked me over. I'm not going to deal with it. So with Don't Go Into the Woods, I'm even saying the retitled version. yeah, so Don't Go Into the Woods Alone. What happened with that is I think Code Red actually put out – yeah, they put out the title. And then for whatever reason, I think the rights – I'm not sure if they – I mean, they had to have lapsed. Otherwise, we would never do it. And then – I guess we picked it up and said, you know, we'll scan it for Blu-ray. And we did a high definition transfer, and we actually got, and actually I think the director, he owned all the behind the scenes footage. And also that's the case with Mad Men as well. And so we put that out, and yeah, I mean, it was great. We did the new digital transfer. And again, the original elements there, you watch the Blu-ray and it's my feeling as a restoration artist, it's definitely not one of our best ones, you know, but there's like so much inherent damage to the negative and to the print. You know, we did our best. I think it looks pretty good for what it is. So,
well,
yeah.
You know, I was watching a Criterion, the Night Porter the other day, and there's a whole scene where it looks like a pube just right there on the top corner of the screen. So even like Criterion can't fix everything.
Yeah, yeah. No. It's a hair in the gate. That's
you posted a picture of a fly or the other day.
Is it a roach?
Yeah. Or a bug?
That was squished in an X-rated title. We all thought that was pretty funny. That was, and sometimes you'll get things that'll go like a certain amount of frames, but this one was just one frame. So the bug was squished on exactly one frame.
Well, they were actually processing and, you know, mixing the chemicals to actually print out the negative. Somehow, I guess a bug must have gotten in.
Wow.
So you mentioned the hair thing. Sometimes that'll happen in the scanning process, but really often it could happen in the original camera when they're shooting actual film. So
yeah.
if there's a hair in the camera or in the lens somehow when they were shooting it in 1970. There's nothing we can do to fix something like that that's over thousands of frames that moves so much. That's something that no one can really do.
Because I guess one of the big things with and with the actual restoration is if there's a lot of movement with mixed with damage, it's a very tricky thing to restore. You don't want to create digital artifacting by any means.
Yeah, it's the last thing we want
to
do.
Yeah, so if that's the case, we'll just opt out to leave the damage in, unfortunately. Or you know, we can rescan the little section and maybe actually clean it up with like a little Q-tip, the actual film itself, see if we can clean it up better. But sometimes it's just burned in almost. So.
And it's not something that we spend 10 minutes on. Brandon spends sometimes a month on one of these films, so we spend a lot of time on these films.
Yeah.
I think we can appreciate both sides of that fact, because, I mean, it's fun to watch, you know, the whole restoration making it look the best it's ever been, and there's also that side to see it in its original, you know, kind of torn up, gritty. I don't know, it's almost like both. Like, almost if we could have both versions on Blu-rays, that would be cool, but, I mean, obviously that's a little out of the question, but I mean, yeah, you could appreciate both sides of the fact, especially all the work that goes into it, you know, because if you're going to do it, you might as well do it the best it's ever looked and the best you can.
Yeah.
I see that. I mean, I see a lot of people, I mean, a friend of mine and I were just on Twitter, we're discussing kind of Twitter or Facebook about film restoration, and somebody was complaining about the new Screen Factory, or it was one of the movie review websites. They gave kind of a lower score to the new Screen Factory Escape from New York Blu-ray, which they did a new scan on, and it's like, I don't understand. Everyone thinks that these movies should look totally pristine, but that's just not possible at all, you know. And I feel like a lot of these people running these Blu-ray sites, review sites, don't. Some of these critics, I guess, don't understand the process, you know. And I bring this up quite a bit. I think when we talk to people, I think I even brought this up last time we talked. But trying to get people to understand the restoration process, I think, is important. For these films.
Yeah, and you know, I'm personally real excited to see the Escape from New York. Just the fact that, you know, they said they did a new 2K restoration from the inner positive, which probably means that the negative is probably either so unfortunately deteriorated and probably has vinegar syndrome on it. So they probably, you know, wanted to go to the next best thing, which 9 times out of 10 is the inner positive, or in other cases, what's something called the inner negative.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's one of those things where, like, knowing what I know now, I guess I have a great appreciation for restorations that even just putting the work in and seeing that maybe they don't look, you know, perfect by any means, I still think they look fantastic. You know, and now it all depends too. Screen Factory, like, for as an example, you know, they put out some fantastic stuff, but other times odds are they've gotten transfers which they probably have no control over.
We talk about that frequently on the show.
Yeah.
We're kind of very lucky in terms of we do all the restoration in-house. You know, James literally gets the negative roll, gives it to me, I clean it, then I put it on the scanner so I see what's wrong with it as it's going. And if there's, you know, a big problem, we can take it off the scanner and try and clean it or do something with that. Actually, James is in the process of slowly but surely getting mold off of film, and that is probably the most.
Yeah. Wow. Right now I'm working on a mag track that has oxidized mold on it that I'm spending like hours today, yesterday, probably next week too, just by hand rubbing frames to take the mold off, and it's not hurting the film at all. So it's changing the sound. It's track.
Yeah,
but it takes a really long time.
But it's we did one just as a test, and it came out like 10,000 times better.
Yeah, especially when some of the musicians that are in it are like big name musicians, so it's really exciting.
Oh, cool!
You got to do it right.
Yeah.
But when it comes to reviewers and, you know, people having high expectations, it's okay, because we want for our kind of thing that we do, we want the bar set high, so we always want to try to do better.
Yeah.
But also, you know, everyone. looks at these films and they look at their childhood, and it's extremely personal. Like, I have extremely personal memories of Escape from New York. So, you know, some people get really upset if you don't treat their personal childhood memories right, but you got to be patient.
Yeah, and, you know, I still give the benefit of the doubt until I've actually seen what the film looks like, too. And, you know, it's, I guess, like, to me, the worst thing you could do is seeing something that's waxy from too much digital noise reduction. That's, like, the worst thing. And unfortunately, you know, the worst example to me lately was Nosferatu, unfortunately, because I did really like that movie. But it wasn't the worst DNR. That still remains Fox's Predator. But luckily, I've been trying to track down the old Blu-ray.
Yeah, the old one you can find probably for pretty cheap. I got that one. I got both versions, one for special features and one for a nice grainy version of Predator.
They didn't try to fix anything, but you know what? Sometimes that just leave it alone. It's fine yet. I guess sometimes you just always go back to the, you know, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. You know, some people will see it, think it's the greatest restoration. Some people will be more critical of it. So, you know,
I kind of see it as the Roman mob. You never know. You just do your best and hopefully you don't get eaten alive.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, I think speaking on behalf of that is, you know, because I forget who said it earlier. You said Don't Go Into the Woods is probably not your best. Mm-hmm. See, that was a complete opposite for me, because I think it's one of your best. Because,
oh, really? Thank
this
you.
Well, this is a film that I grew up with.
Oh, okay.
Oddly enough, it's very important to me. I know it's not a great movie at all, but, you know, I've had the VHS for a long time, and it's, you know, you're talking about the importance of movies and, you know, how they're, you know, personal and important to you. This was a film that I originally watched with my mom when I was, I was like 11 or 12. And, it was the first time. My mom's always like anti-talking in movies, like no noise, no chips, no popcorn, no nothing. So we put it on, and my mom just starts cracking jokes at the movie of how bad it is.
Yeah.
And it was the first time I actually got to experience something like that, because I never went to the theater where that would happen. Or, you know, it wasn't that popular. I mean, Mystery Science Theater wasn't around that I knew of at that time. So my mom, like, heckling and cracking up and making jokes. I just remember the one sequence where the guy, he hits, stabs the other guy in the stomach, and he's like, I'm sorry. And my mom just, like, crying and telling me to rewind it and just watching it over and over again, and just how goofy it was. And, you know, just the awful, like, but at the same time, amazing soundtrack that sounds like a little kid playing, like, a, you know, a keyboard or whatever.
Yeah, it's like a Casio.
But, you know, just going through that and, you know, watching this, you know, because I had the VHS, I had the DVD, and moving on to the Blu-ray, I can tell you right now, growing up with this is definitely the best this film has ever looked. I mean, it's impressive due to the fact that, I mean, this is a James Bryan movie, it's filmed in the woods, it's all ADR basically. You know, but I mean, the greens are green, the reds are red, it's beautiful looking, and it's definitely one of the best. And I have all your Blu-rays, and that's speaking from experience of your work. So it's impressive for me. I think the reason why I think people are a little bit more harsh on this one is because it's not a very good movie. that's just honest opinion. I mean, if you grew up with it, it's a simple slasher, and a guy wears a necklace on his face as the killer. So
he looks like a mutated Ewok.
Yeah. In the extras, they spend like majority of the time discussing the evil man, and it's just like so many of them just want. Everyone wants to know who he is, where he's from, what's going on. And even the guy that played him had no idea what he was or what was going on.
I think my favorite aspect of the whole film is the ADR.
Because
especially the guy who's like, I'm sorry. When I first see the guy, because, you know, one cool thing about doing restoration on these films is you're seeing these people talk, but you don't hear them because I'm only restoring the picture, so I don't hear anything.
Yeah.
And I just picture in my head what these people will sound like. And Don't Go in the Woods was the first film that nobody remotely sounded what was like in my head.
Dude, the guy when he's stabbing him too, don't forget, like, not only does he's like, oh, I'm sorry, you gotta remember like the like that sound. I'm sorry.
Well, just the point, even the part where the two old people are walking up the hill, and then she just keeps repeating his name. I forget what his name is. She's like, Dick.
That was one point. I was like, oh my god, please don't get killed right now.
he had a pink beret on, and he was like, take pictures, man.
Pink beret, pink Hawaiian shirt, and I think his shoes even had pink trim. Amazing.
Like, not even remotely, like, nothing you would remotely hike with.
It was, no one in that movie should have ever gone in the woods in their lives.
Yeah. Well, apparently, I was listening to, I think, the second commentary track, and they were discussing that, and the costume designer would just go to the local thrift stores and just bring a bunch of crap, you know, and...
Yeah. His wife ran a costume shop along with someone else that was in the movie. So they were like very debonair, I think. They focused on getting something that would be pleasing to the eye, I guess.
You know, the one thing I thought was funny is that the one guy, one of the survivors, spoiler alert, he has the a Boogie Vision t-shirt on, which is one of James Bryan's earlier films.
Yeah.
I always thought that was humorous. I mean, I didn't catch that until later on in life, but, you know, it's just I was like, why do you have a Boogie Vision t-shirt?
It's like bright pink Boogie Vision t-shirt.
Yeah. It doesn't fit with hiking again. It doesn't fit at all, but, you know.
Nothing fits in that movie at all.
But that's what, you know, it's kind of the charm of it, too, you know? It's just fun.
Completely, yes.
Yeah, it's just fun to watch.
I definitely had a better experience watching it with the group commentary. The first time I was watching, I was like, what the hell is Brad making me watch?
Greatest movie ever is what I made you watch.
I powered through it and enjoyed it. It seems like it's one of those movies that would benefit from kind of a group viewing. You get a bunch of friends together and heckle the shit out of this thing is what it seems like, which is why I think I had fun listening to the commentary, because that's pretty much, you know, what they were doing.
Yeah, we each had to QC it and with all the extras, so it's like we can't watch with a group. We have to watch in like a single cell alone and watch the movie.
It's not that bad.
Watch the movie three times in a row and watch all the extra. Oh man.
These extras, were they a part of the package deal that you got, like the commentary?
Yeah. And one of the extras, I think it's the party where with the ventriloquist. I think that was one that wasn't on the DVD before.
Okay.
And the director, he gave us these extras and said to include them. So
my favorite extra is they talk to that old guy that's in the van, the hippie van. he's going out to his outside shed, and he's just like taking the audience to. He's like really old now, and he's like talking about the jingle stick, and then he tries to like auction it at like $500. Find James Bryant, and then you find me, and I'll give it away for $500. No more jingles on it, but I'll still part with it.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
One of the commentaries, the group one, it has two super fans.
Yeah.
I read that one of them was in the band CKY, and is that who?
Darren Miller.
Yeah. He's a big horror super fan.
Yeah, he's a big horror geek. He's actually going to be on the Madman Blu-ray.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah. He's included in the original, the Madman Lives 90-minute documentary. Which I think is a really good documentary about like all the behind the scenes stuff and everything. But Darren Miller, he's like a big horror fanatic. He actually wrote that song "Escape from Hellview" for CK.
Well, yeah, it's also Felissa Rose's husband.
Yeah. That's about essentially, you know, escaping from Batman.
Nice.
Yeah.
I mean, him marrying Felicia Rose is the, like, epitome of super fandom.
Yeah.
It's like the holy grail.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about the recent Etiquette Pictures thing.
Oh,
can
yeah.
you, can you, for our listeners, mainly because you briefed on it a little bit on Facebook, but can you give us any more details with that collaboration and the whole thing with Xenon as well?
Yeah, that we've been working on for a while now. For those who don't know, Etiquette Pictures, what that is it's essentially going to be, I guess, our type of art house, art house 70s, not so much exploitation, but I guess more of the artsy independent stuff that came out that, you know, maybe other companies aren't putting out.
But experimental stuff.
Yeah, a lot of experimental stuff. And what's cool is we made a deal with Xenon Pictures, and we're going to be doing all new restorations of Melvin Van Peebles' Sweetback's Badass Song.
That's awesome.
I think next year we're doing two of his earlier films. I think one of them is a musical, too, like a crazy, weird musical. Then we're also, of course, we're also doing, Is it Bakshi or is it Bakshi? Yeah, Bakshi.
Ralph Bakshi, yeah.
Yeah, yep. His film Coonskin. We're doing the new restoration of that. And then, of course, my personal favorite, this one's probably going to be coming out through Vinegar Syndrome, because it fits more with Vinegar Syndrome, Dolomite.
And, yeah.
That one's real exciting. So,
now, is there a question just off the top of your head? Now, is there anything, you know, just for fun, is there anything that you've released under Vinegar Syndrome that you would have released so people can get a better idea what you would release?
Yeah,
Telephone
book. That would be the biggest. Would be, and, you know, if it ever comes across where we somehow find a negative for that film, we would do it again in a heartbeat just to have it preserved from the negative, because the last one we used was from a decent print, but it was still from a print. So, but yeah, definitely Telephone Book.
Maybe Bible?
Yeah, probably Bible, you know. Yeah.
So basically, just to give the fans and listeners kind of an idea of where this whole side distribution thing is going.
Yeah, it's our first release is actually Some Call It Loving from director James B. Harris, and it's a really weird, crazy take on the Sleeping Beauty story. And it's about this guy who goes to a carnival, you know, and there's a sideshow with this girl who apparently who's just asleep and hasn't awoken in, you know, 10 years, 12 years, something like that. And he decides to take her home, and like he wakes her up and it starts playing games and these really crazy mind games. And it's really interesting because, you know, Richard Pryor is in it as like a supporting role. Huh. And it's a really kind of sad, dramatic role for him. I won't get into too many spoilers, but it's, you watch it and you're like, wow, he's not funny in this. and I kind of geeked out when I heard we were doing that film, because of course, for all the other film nerds out there know that James B. Harris, what he's most known for is he helped in producing Stanley Kubrick's early films to get into the Hollywood system. So that's our first film. Our second film, real exciting, is The American Dreamer, which is it's a documentary on Dennis Hopper. After he made Easy Rider, he basically got carte blanche to make whatever he wanted from a major studio. And so he decided to make this film called The Last Movie, and you basically see how it's – the last movie, I guess, did pretty bad. Got bad reviews. It's actually – I don't think it's ever come out, even on VHS.
Is that the one where he sets himself on fire?
I'm not. No one's seen it. That's the problem.
Well, there's a clip online. Like, I know it's not released, but there's a clip on YouTube.
Yeah.
Of Dennis Hopper setting himself on fire, and I want to say it's from that movie.
It could be.
But anyways, yeah.
But so The American Dreamer is basically his. You know, he basically moves into this big house and just has this kind of entourage around, and I think he asks like the Playboy bunnies to join him and stuff, and it gets really crazy and nutty. You see him firing off his, you know, assault rifle and everything, and it's just really, really interesting to see just that era, you know, in Hollywood when all of a sudden these studios were given these, you know, just, you know, out of, well, Dennis Hopper was around for a while, but basically given these guys, you know, who made a low budget film that was really successful, you know, giving them carte blanche to do whatever they wanted. So,
yeah, and Dennis Hopper didn't really seem to, especially at that time, to be the most stable person.
yeah, he's setting himself on fire.
Word I would use that era, but no, it's definitely a really cool film too. And we got a lot of other films in the works as well. So
now with the kind of the thing with Xenon owns a ton of or they have released in the past a ton of blaxploitation films. So is that going to be kind of a blaxploitation label that we're going to get at the same time doing some of their older films, or speak on behalf of that?
We
would never limit ourselves to something like that, but we're going to try to stay true to if it fits, we'll put it on, we'll repair it, we'll fix it up. But no, it's not just going to be blaxploitation.
Well, no, I kind of meant just releasing some of their past. Like, you know, they've released Penitentiary, you know, kind of, you know, In Your Face. They've released those types of things.
Yeah, well, we're going to see how it goes, you know. We'll see how it
– yeah.
I'm sure they'll do, you know, knock on – you never know how these titles are going to do. But
right,
they do well. And if they do well, you know, Coonskin and Sweet Sweetback and Dolomite, if they do well, then we'll keep going basically through their library, you know?
Yeah, I'm a big – we did a whole – we did a three-part blaxploitation for the show a few during February, and that was – we actually covered, you know, mostly all blaxploitation.
Yeah, I was frustrated because I couldn't find a decent copy of Sweet Sweetback
that's the
anywhere.
Thing is, you know, a lot of these are hard to find.
I may or may not have had to YouTube it.
Yeah.
No, you have to, yeah.
But
it sucks.
Yeah, I'm super excited about seeing that in Blu-ray. That's going to be kind of one of the holy grail, you know, movies for sure.
Well, it's funny because we're putting out etiquette because a lot of people don't consider it a blaxploitation because of the ending,
right?
Because of how it ends, a lot of people consider it more of just a true black independent film that happens to have like some more blaxploitative elements in it. But I'm real excited to see it.
I mean, it kickstarted the blaxploitation films, I consider it more of a – I mean, it's way more artsy and kind of real than anything else we covered, for sure, yeah.
Well, I think it was something – it was more or less he had something to prove rather than, you know, kind of what blaxploitation led up to. I mean, he really – I mean, we talk about that in our episode, of course. I don't want to rehash everything.
Here
but,
we go.
Yeah, don't get me started because I'll fucking go off again. But you know, it's a lot of power. It's a big powerhouse for that, just to show it can be done.
Yeah.
But anyways, I'm not going to get into that because I get too passionate about blaxploitation. I'm just going to stop.
Let's see here.
You got your notes, Sean?
I'm looking here. I wanted to.
What's your notes say?
No, I wanted to.
Left-handed notes.
I wanted to touch base on the Indiegogo campaign. You know, I mean, things are moving along. I mean, people have
by that. Yeah. We're still, so our plan is to get for people who got the perks for the Blu-ray and DVD, the plan is, late May, you guys will be getting that in the mail. You know, the Executioner 2 Blu-ray.
So excited.
Yeah. So, and then I believe the Lem Anthony films that was the DVD, the limited edition DVD, and then now as far as the actual streaming site, we're kind of merging everything together into, and we're kind of also, instead of, you know, it was vinegarsyndrome.tv, it is now exploitation.tv, and the reason we did that is because we don't want to be just all inclusive, you know, if all of a sudden we decide to put the Dolomite films on, well, that's kind of Xenon's thing, you know, so we want to kind of include, you know, be able to include them. So that's why we kind of changed it to exploitation.tv, so to be more, I guess, available to other companies who might want to put up their grindhouse titles, you know, that were restored or, you know, stuff like that. So.
That's now, awesome. Are we just with exploitation TV? Are we still? What are the actual platforms that are going to be for sure? And is there any potentials? Because I know that we, you know, on the campaign, you hinted like maybe on PlayStation Network, Xbox, stuff like that. Has any of that progressed, or is it just still kind of the Roku? Or
no, we're still right now. It's definite like Roku apps. It's definite. You could just go on your computer and watch. It's pretty definite for iOS and Android apps. We're looking into the Xbox and the PlayStation Network. It's kind of weird because we still want to include the X-rated stuff up there, but some of these platforms say, "Oh, you can't do that." Like, we're getting a couple of roadblocks, but we'll get through them eventually.
There's always a lot of red tape when it comes to this kind of stuff.
Yeah, but our goal is to still have really beta testing in late May with a full launch in, you know, the first week of June, just to have the entire thing launched. But I think we are going to do an actual beta test where, you know, we'll send out a few people who kicks to help with the Indiegogo campaign. We'll say, hey, here's the app, here's the site, let us know what's wrong with it, basically. You know, how to start off with it.
Yeah.
It's coming along. You know, I actually just scanned around at like over 30, you know, trailers from the 70s that we have lying around here. And some, you know, just they're completely random and kind of, you know, like what Draft House does, where they kind of curate to what movie you're seeing. It's going to be kind of like that, where the only commercial in quotes is, you know, a random trailer from the 70s, and I have no idea the order or what, but it'll be pretty funny.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
As far as like everyone who had with the perks, you know, everyone kind of emailed you guys their picks. You know, if you got the $100, $110, or the $200, are you guys going to be shipping those out like all at once? Because there's a lot of, you know, I would assume a lot of people did pre-order, you know what I mean? Or are they going to come out once the movie's released? Are you going to send that out? How are you guys navigating that?
We have an email set up for it, and we've been kind of waiting for people to send in their requests. But people have been really nice because they know that if they all go at once, it'll be a little hard for everybody. But we're going to send them out as people send them in. And after a few months, I'm sure everything will get sorted out. But it's been good so far.
It's actually more easier for us if people come in like now and say, okay, I want these titles that you have available now. And that's pretty easy. But then, you know, a lot of people do want the pre-orders, and that's fine, too. We'll get them out as they go.
Yeah, because that's what I did.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting. Because I don't want to rush you guys. I was being conservative. Unlike Sean over here being a jerk.
Yeah. I was just trying to make it easy. Get me on a spreadsheet and be done with it, you know?
It's a left hand.
Now, I wanted to talk a little bit, because I know that you posted on your Facebook page, so all the followers on there will know, but obviously people that have missed it. You know, you're saying the Cutthroats is going to be is one of your limited editions again. And now, is that specific to Cinema Wasteland, kind of like Murder on the Emerald Seas?
No.
All that is,
no.
Order the, if you are one of the people who bought the yearly packages, or if you're someone who, all it's really required is if you get the May pre-order package and the June pre-order package, and then we just ship it out to you for June. You don't actually buy it per se, but, after June, you know, if we have any left over, that's when we'll sell them. You know, just get them out, get the rest out there.
And what is the, I guess, the motivation for that? Because, I mean, Murder on the Emerald Seas was like, what, 500 copies?
Something like that, yeah.
This one, and how many is this?
I think it's 1,500. Pretty sure,
okay. That's a lot more. Yeah. So why the 500 on Murder on the Emerald Seas? I never got to ask you.
That was
guys.
Kind of a...
Kind of a deal with a distributor, or
that film's technically in the public domain.
Okay, and
it was from a pretty beat up print, but we came to realize it was pretty much the only elements available for it. So, it was kind of a way to basically kind of raise money for these other bigger projects as well.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's kind of the fine line with, you know, people say, yeah, you're doing these limited editions. You're kind of creating a scarcity market, which we don't really mean to do, you know. You know, like the Sex World, the Pretty Peaches, you know, people did not get the Blu-rays. There are mass market DVDs, you know, and all these limited editions, we kind of do them just to get more money towards the bigger and better, you know, bigger, crazier projects, you know, like Xenon would be one of them, you know, putting together,
right,
doing the sweet back and, you know, those other projects. You know, if we don't do the limited editions, it does mean raising, you know, money, raising the price of Blu-rays and everything. I think in the market, we're actually pretty relatively cheaper.
Yeah.
Than a lot of companies.
No, you are. Yes, you are. Yeah. You're a lot cheaper.
Yeah. And
thank you.
Cheap whores.
So it's one of those things where, you know, okay, well, we don't want to do this limited, but do we raise the price up on it? You know, and I think a lot of fans would be fine with it at the same time, but I don't know. I don't think we're there yet. Where we don't want to raise the price exponentially.
But it's not going to be at Wasteland. It's going to be the 2 months that are you pre-orders and then you get them.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they will be out for sale, and there will be more of them instead of Emerald Sea.
Like, that's why we did 1,500, because yep, there's extra in. But now, at Cinema Wasteland, though, what's kind of cool is Gene Silver herself is going to be there, so we're going to actually have copies of the long Gene Silver there, and she's going to do autographs and stuff as well. So,
awesome.
Nice. Yeah.
That we're not going to be at, so.
Sorry.
I'm upset.
It's your fault. It's totally your fault.
Nope, I got friends and high places that will be picking me up something, so.
Oh, okay. Man.
I gotta do it.
All right. Well, hey guys, I need to start wrapping up here, so I got to.
I have to go clean mold. So. Okay.
I gotta head back to the office and stare at a computer screen. But it's always great to talk to you guys, and I think as things come up, it's great to get your guys' insight to your releases. I know a lot of people really dug that with the last episode. So we'll be having you guys on more.
Madman.
Madman for sure.
Madman Mars.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. Well, is there anything else coming down the line? I think we've done a good job of kind of plugging everything. Is there anything we didn't mention that you guys need to let us know about? Or I think.
Well, we always have really big stuff coming up. Yeah. Right now, we're just going to keep it vague. We're going to be those vague, cheap assholes. Yeah. Thank you for your time.
Nice. All right, guys. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks, guys.
Don't go out in the woods tonight. You probably will be thrilled. Don't go out in the woods tonight, you probably will be killed. There's a friendly beast who lurks about and likes to feast. You won't get out without being killed and chopped up in little pieces. Don't go out in the woods tonight, you probably will be thrilled. Don't go out in the woods tonight, you probably will be killed. There's a friendly beast who lurks about and likes to feast. You won't get out without being killed and chopped up in little pieces.
We're going to skip our pick of the week this week because, you know, we don't, you know, yeah. Because we're going to be doing a setting up for a drawing to win a Screamcast mug and some Coffee Shop of Horrors coffee. So the it's not a trivia question, but what we want to hear from you, write into readme@thescreamcast.com. Let us know what your guiltiest pleasure is.
Do I need to explain what guilty pleasure is?
Brad, take it away, because we're not just talking like, you know, just something funny.
I think
or whatever.
guilty pleasure gets lumped into like, a lot of people don't like this movie, but I do. No, it's not that. Like, even Sean had it wrong. Because you said Pathfinder.
I was saying like Pathfinder or even Underworld or something like that.
Guilty pleasure has to be something that necessarily you would have to be kind of embarrassed to purchase. Like, if this is the one movie you had that you took up to the counter and bought, and somebody looked you in the eye and then looked at the movie, and you would somehow not feel so confident with it, that's a guilty pleasure. So, like, when Sean says he likes Blue Crush, that's a guilty pleasure. My guilty pleasure is Bring It On, the cheerleading movie with Kirsten Dunst and Eliza Dushku. That's my guilty pleasure. You know, I actually had to have a friend, it was a joke. He owed me money, and he said, I'll buy whatever you want. And so I was like, you're buying this for me, because I've always kind of always put it down because I really don't know how to go up to the counter with, a bunch of teenagers in bikinis and, cheerleading outfits. So, but yeah, something of that nature. Like, it can't be all, fucking I like Hansel and Gretel. No, that's not a guilty pleasure. Like, it can't be one of those. It doesn't have to be a bad movie. That's what I think people misinterpret, is that it's a bad movie. No, it has to be something embarrassing. Like, maybe you wouldn't talk about with a group of people. You wouldn't talk about over dinner with, your boyfriend, girlfriend. You would kind of keep it secret. So, like, if a dude really likes Twilight, that would be a guilty pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
Something of that nature.
And you know what? No judgment.
There's no judgment. We all have them.
Yeah.
I mean, mine's Bring It On. Like, I fucking love that movie. Something along the lines.
Nice. So write in, readme@thescreamcast.com, and we will tally up the emails. If we have time to read all of them, we will. If we get a giant amount in, we'll pick, handpick some of our favorites, and then we'll draw your names out of the hat for a chance to win.
Like, so, literally a hat? Like,
literally, hat? I have a hat that I will pull
you
names
a,
out of.
You have a doofus hat, don't you? You look like you would have like a brim hat.
Yeah, let's just say I bought it when I was on the coast, Carlsbad.
Or Coke. You were on Coke.
I was on Coke. All right, well, that's going to do it for this week's show. We want to thank Coffee Shop of Horrors. Of course, use the coupon code SCREAMCAST when checking out at coffeeshopofhorrors.com. You get 10% off. I want to thank oneofus.net for hosting our show. And if you haven't checked out their other shows, please do. They have you can go to iTunes, type in one of us, net or something like that. You should be able to find their stream. even if you go into iTunes and you type in Screamcast, you'll see our individual feed, but you'll also see one of us's feed, and they have all their shows on there. So it's a good way to check in with all their shows. You'll have like a full week of content to listen to. And, so if you want to do that, go for it. And we want to thank them for bringing us on board.
Putting up with us, really.
Pretty much.
Really.
And then also nerdly.co.uk. They give us some love over there in the UK. So we want to thank them for all that. And that's gonna do it for this week's show. And I thank all of you for listening. Talk to you next time. Bye bye.
Bye, Sean. Bye, everybody.
Bye, Brad.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. The party's just begun.